So today, by the mercy and potency of Shishi Gauranga Rangva, we will be taking a look at Bhaktivinoda Thakura's Atmanavida in the section of Sharanagati. Actually, this is the very heart of Sharanagati, and we really need a lot of mercy to access it. The personification and the perfection of Atmanavida we find in Srimati Radharani. It is her month, her place. So I think it's a good thing that we pray to her for some entrance, for some factual entrance into this field. So let's just offer her a prayer. So actually, Atmanavedana is not new to us. We've presently sold out heart and soul to so many things, to our idea of who we are, to our idea of what our security is, to our attachment to our so-called independence. Atmanavedana is not a new thing. We're very experienced in the field, but unfortunately our practice is a little off-key. So Bhaktivinoda Thakura is going to suggest some major paradigm shifts in our present understanding and practice of Atmanavedana. We'll have a look first at, or I'll just read it actually, you don't need to look at it, but in the seventh song of Daina, we find that an elevated Vaishnava, a pure and elevated Vaishnava, said to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, Sri Krishna Chaitanya has appeared in the land of Navadvip in order to deliver you. He has safely conducted many miserable souls such as you across the sea of worldly existence. Sri Chaitanya Gosai, who is Krishna himself, the son of Nanda, has saved the world by freely distributing the gift of his own holy name. Go to him also and receive your deliverance. So Bhaktivinoda Thakura has faith in these words, and his response we find in the last verse of the last song of Daina, where he says, hearing these words, O Lord, Bhaktivinoda has come weeping and weeping to the soles of your lotus feet and tells the story of his life. So the first two songs of Atmanavedana, in essence, are Bhaktivinoda Thakura taking shelter of Mahaprabhu's lotus feet and weeping, telling him the story of his life. He is also acknowledging that Krishna is to be eternally served, and that he is his eternal servant. So let's have a look at song 1. We'll just read through it. I have not performed any good works. I have not amassed any transcendental knowledge. I have never worshipped your lotus feet. Being intoxicated by sensual pleasures, I have simply cheated myself. Now I see only darkness in all directions. O Lord, you are the fountainhead of all mercy. I surrender myself at your lotus feet. Kindly show me your compassion. It is your promise, the one who takes refuge in you will come to no harm. For a sinner like me, I see no other shelter. Therefore, I beg you now for your grace. Oh, when will I know freedom from incessant material desires and thus become exclusively yours? This is the sum of Bhaktivinoda's musings. You are eternally to be served, and I am your eternal servant. So song 2 is pretty much in the same mood, but in this song, Bhaktivinoda Thakura accepts responsibility for his previous nonsense, and is prepared to accept punishment if that's what Krishna wants. He's throwing himself at Krishna's feet, and he's depending on his mercy. Let's see what he has to say. O Lord of my life, how shall I tell you of my shameful story? There is no sin which I have not committed thousands of times and more, O Lord. My life in this world has only been one of affliction and torment as a result of those sins. Who is there to blame for this misery? At the time, I did not consider the consequences, but now in the aftermath, I seek to be saved. After judging my sins, you will surely punish me befittingly, and I shall suffer the pangs of rebirth in this world. I only pray that as I come and go through repeated births and deaths, my mind may ever dwell at your lotus feet as I keep the company of your devotees. I offer this judicious prayer at your feet. The pride of my heart has gone far away. Oh, you are so kind to the meek. Your spotlessly pure mercy has become Bhaktivinoda Thakura's only hope. So, when we read these bhajans, we just see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Interesting? Bhajans. 8 bhajans. But actually what we find is that between bhajan 2 and 3, Bhaktivinoda Thakura is introducing a very subtle but very crucial paradigm shift that we need to make. And if we're not aware of what, we don't have the good fortune to be aware of what we're involved in, this paradigm shift may take us many lifetimes. We may go on in the dress of a Vaishnava, Kanishtha Vaishnava, for many lifetimes. Our mind may have been purified by honest humility. Our heart may have been softened by genuine deep repentance. But this is not enough for transformation of heart. We see it in our own experience if we're honest with each other. We have such emotions as repentance, humility, but tomorrow the pendulum has swung the other way and we're back to being, you know, it just goes like this, isn't it? So there's obviously, this is not going to be enough. So we want to have a look, a solid look, at why transcendental change of heart is actually such a challenge. Most of us who are serious and sincere, we have a hankering for change of heart. We do all in our capacity for that change. But somehow or other it eludes us. So today we're going to have a look at why it eludes us and get rid of it. Get rid of this challenge. Okay, so let's have a look at our first handout. It's called When Change of Heart is a Challenge. Okay. So for as long as we're absorbed in me and mine and locked to the mental platform, we can only make adjustments. Transformational change is not actually an option. Transformational change only becomes possible when we take honest shelter of the mercy and potency of Shishi Gungaranga and try to live as their servant in this world, depend on their mercy and potency. So let's explore why it's not possible. It's a pretty bleak story. Unfortunately, we all have ahankar, a false ego. This by very definition means that we're talking me and mine. No longer Krishna and Krishna's, but me and mine. And the me, concept of I'm more important, is actually born of envy of Krishna. Born of envy of Krishna. And the mine, why has Krishna got so much facility? Why not me? Lust. I want. At your expense, I want. Yes? You're seeing how it's unfolding. And then, when you're envious of somebody, and it's a competitive world after all, then you have to exert controllership to get what you want. To assert yourself, you have to control. On the other side of the coin, there's doership. Or sorry, that should be enjoyership. just change that on your sheet. The under lust should be enjoyship, in the middle should be doership. So we can understand that we have this lust, this burning lust. So then there's going to be a desire to enjoy and to actually try and control things in that way. And both of these, controllership and enjoyership, mean I'm the doer. There'll be doership there. I'm the doer. I'm in control. I'm the enjoyer. Can't do that unless you think you're the doer. So these are what we're actually talking about, is gyan, which we're looking at aversion and rejection, or karma, attachment and accepting. Because control the ship, the preoccupation is, I'll figure it out. I'll figure it out. Right? Gyan. Very simple, but that's what we're looking at. And the karma, I'll work it out. I'll work through it. I'll do it. Yeah? So what's happening? The envy and the lust are the mood of the conditioned soul. And the controllership, doership, and enjoyership are our preoccupation. I'm looking blank. I'm looking in like hard facts. No frills today. So that's the preoccupation. Controlling, enjoying, and the doership that goes with that. And then our oscillating activity, we're like a pendulum. Aversion, attraction, aversion, attraction. Aversion, attraction. And we're sure every time we swing the other side, it's an improvement. What an illusion. We're just swinging, it's just a pendulum. And we're swinging backwards and forwards. Right? So this, what does it mean? It means in effect it's a very nasty entanglement. Very, very nasty entanglement. And it's an amazing network. It's an amazing network for keeping us bound here. We're locked into a reality that has nothing to do with us. Not only does it not have anything to do with us, but it's preventing us from understanding what does have something to do with us. That's really nasty. So the question comes to the person who's thinking, well, is there any way out of this madness? Is there any way I can cut through it? Yes, there is a way. Actually, just before we move on from this sheet, in effect, if you're practicing bhakti appropriately, under proper shelter, what bhakti is the knife that cuts right through the middle. It cuts right through the middle. So let's explore how that works. I want you to listen carefully to this. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is sharing his heart with us in the form of these very prayerful bhajans. But where there's prayer, the prayers of a serious Vaishnava, is obviously also serious practice. Not just prayers, but the prayers are indicative of the mood of the practice that's going on. And we'll find that many of the keys for progressive change will be found in the practice, not in the prayer. The prayer is the mood. Transcendental change, transformational change, is not going to come from contemplation. It's got to come from activity. But then we have to look at the practice. So have a look at your next sheet. This is called You Are Master, I Am Servant. Okay. Let's read the prayer. This is also from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but it's from Gita Mala. O Lord Krishna, you are the father of the universe. You are the mother of the universe. O Lord Krishna, you are the beloved son. You are the spiritual master, the well-wisher, the friend. You are the shelter and the corporate bhikshu tree. In these ways, I have a relationship with you. I am your servant, your follower, a poor person who begs for your shelter, a soul surrendered at the Lord's feet. I am your property, your creation, your dependent, protected by you. I am yours. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I do not probably think I am mine in my relationship with Lord Krishna. Still, as I serve him, I do think in terms of I and mine. Outside of serving him, these would only be material thoughts. Now let's have a look at the practice. This is actually the working principle behind the tattva that we saw in the prayer. And it's exercising this principle that will transform the heart. I am by nature the eternal servant of Krishna, but because of my bad fortune, I have been inimical toward Krishna from time immemorial. Identifying with my body, I have been continuously wandering in the cycle of birth and death in the material world, suffering the burning threefold miseries. As a result of some unimaginable good fortune, I have obtained the mercy of my spiritual master. This is the first key. Not that by my adhika, by my past good works, it's unimaginable good fortune. And it's mercy, the mercy of my spiritual master. I'm a mercy case, admitting that I'm a mercy case. Good fortune and mercy, this understanding. And now I know that I'm Krishna's eternal servant. I haven't realized it, but I at least know it. Good start. I am an infinitesimal spiritual being completely apart from the gross and subtle body. I have obtained the good fortune of serving the lotus feet of Sri Guru. Again, good fortune. It's a good fortune to be able to serve the lotus feet of Guru. Serving the lotus feet of Guru, we're looking at a mood of dasya. And that means everything we do will be in a mood of service to Guru. Whether it be the chanting of our 16 rounds, looking after our kids, going to work, everything will be an act of service to Guru. Under his shelter. Has to be under his shelter. And I have to be conscious that I'm under his shelter. Because if you're conscious that you're under Guru's shelter, you're actively working on that, then what that's going to mean is that when any challenge comes, the first thing you'll do is not try and figure it out, not try and work it out. You're going to take shelter, Guru. Okay, Guru, I don't know what to do in this circumstance. I'm praying to you. I'm begging you, give me some insight. Yeah? Subtle, but important change. I'm following in his footsteps. I haven't got an independent program. Take Nick Diksha and then do my own thing. I'm following in his footsteps. That means I'm following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas because he's following in their footsteps. So again, it's a matter of shelter. It's a matter of security, safety, to be in that circumstance. To serve the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu and Sri Sri Radhakrishna. Not one or the other. Both. Why? Because as Prabhupada tells us in 91 introduction from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is none other than the combined form of Radha and Krishna. He is the life of those devotees who strictly follow in the footsteps of Sri Rupa Goswami. So you cannot, in this age, what a fool, we only serve Mahaprabhu or only serve Radha Krishna. I say full, why? Because Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahiyana Adurya Madurya. Two sides of the same coin. None of us are fit to go straight to Madurya. Our jury has to be there. Yeah? Okay. So this is a very interesting insight that he's giving here. I'll spell it out a little bit more clearly. So the essence of cutting through all the madness, this pendulum business that we've been living for many, many, many years, the essence of how we cut through this is that guru, that sadhu, who we hear from, who we serve, must be a strict follower of Srila Goswami. Better still, he must be a strict follower of 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 Srila Goswami. Essential. Now, why is that? That's a very, very big question. But I just want to look at what's relevant for today's discussion. We're talking about how to transform the heart. A major principle of Srila Rupa Goswami's teachings is Yukta Vairagya. It's a primary teaching. Now, what most people don't understand is that Yukta Vairagya is a Golok principle. It is a Golok principle. If we don't understand it, if we don't follow it, you'll never factually enter Vrindavan. It's an essential entrance ticket. You'll be checked at the gate whether you have it or not. It is essential. The very hub of Braj runs on this principle. So I want to explore this a little bit. Let's have a look at our third hand up. This is called When Attachment Means Detachment. This is all from Srila Prabhupada, except for one quote from the BBC translators. If you catch this, your knife is sharp, you can cut right through the middle of the pendulum. Right through the middle. Because at the moment we're preoccupied in some way or another with either accepting or rejecting. We are on the mental platform. The mind has control. The mind has taken power of attorney. Where's the sense of transcendence? Where's the sense of spiritual advancement from the mental platform? You cannot do it. So you have to have a key, something you can hold on to that cuts through this. Some kind of checklist where you can see whether you're actually on track. That's what I'm giving you here. Consciousness is the key. Because we live in a Kanista society, we're very caught up in externals. Externals have their place, no doubt. But the consciousness is the essence. This first one is a beautiful statement by Prabhupada from his Krishna book. The real elevation of human life rests on knowledge and renunciation. As stated in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, devotional service rendered to Krishna automatically produces perfect knowledge and renunciation. Now, if Prabhupada only said that, you would continue swinging backwards and forwards. It wouldn't make any real sense to you because of your conditioned nature. You think you understood, but you haven't got a clue. So let's read on and see what he says. The family members of the other dynasty, the cowherds of Vrindavan, had their minds fixed on Krishna. That is a symptom of perfect knowledge. Yeah? Not how much you know. How much your mind is fixed on Krishna. Of course, mind can only be fixed on Krishna if the heart's fixed on Krishna. That's the attachment. So this is a symptom of perfect knowledge. And because their minds were always engaged in Krishna, they're automatically freed from all material activities. This stage of life is called Yukta Vairagya, as enunciated by Srila Rupa Goswami. Knowledge and renunciation, therefore, do not mean dry speculation and renunciation of activities. Rather, one must start speaking and acting only in relationship with Krishna. Simple. It is so simple and so beautiful. It's not all these crazy austerities and all this preoccupation with jnana. Just speak and act in relationship to Krishna. Krishna consciousness is so simple. If you understand it from the Goloka perspective. Yeah? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has warned us that if we do not see everything as a manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we shall become victims of falgo vairagya or immature renunciation. Whatever we see as disconnected from Krishna will have in our mind no relationship to Krishna's service. But if we see everything as connected to Krishna, we shall use everything for Krishna's satisfaction. This is called Yukta Vairagya. To see God everywhere and in every living entity is not the final word in self-realization. One needs to see Him in all events, in every activity, in every thought influencing everyone's life, including one's own. You see how important sambhava jnana is? Relationship with Krishna. Not that Krishna's over there and I'm here, never the two will meet, but Krishna in my present reality. How am I relating to Krishna in my present reality? Two things are indispensable for acquiring such a vision. First, we must offer the results of all our activities to Lord Krishna. And second, every action we perform must be done exclusively as devotional service to Him. We must constantly meditate on the fact that Lord Krishna is the only enjoyer and proprietor of every action. So this is not something you can institutionalize. This is not something you can systemize. We're talking about a state of heart. Yeah? A state of heart. What we're talking about. Okay, let's take a look at the next little section. Always remember, never forget. If you can actually imbibe 101% of what you're hearing today, you'll make so much advancement. This is really amazing stuff that Prabhupada's giving us. Really something. Always remember, never forget. If you always remember that everything, whatever you are using is Krishna's energy, you'll be in Krishna consciousness. Just think about it. How we relate with things now. We are so impersonal. We are so exploited. But to see everything, not only everything, but everyone, is Krishna's energy. Although this material energy is separated from Krishna, it can be used for Krishna. And when it is, it becomes spiritual. It is no longer material. It is only material when it's used in forgetfulness of Krishna. There's nothing material in this world except our forgetfulness of Krishna. That's the reality. This is actually what we're looking at. When the karmis, the free workers, construct a big, big skyscraper building, their purpose is to enjoy it themselves. They're using the same things we're using to build the temple. Earth, water, fire, and air. They're mixing them together to make bricks and cement. But since the building is not being used for Krishna, it is material. Only if the building is used for the purposes of Krishna is it spiritual. This is proper renunciation, Yukta Vairagya. The object as it is spirit. In one sense, the sunshine is not the sun, but at the same time, it's non-different from the sun because it's the sun's heat and light. Therefore, our philosophy, Mahaprabhu's philosophy, this is one of the gems he gave us. Mahaprabhu's philosophy is a chintya veda veda tattva. Simultaneously one and different. All these objects are actually spiritual. But if we have no sense of Krishna, consider them to be material. You see, it's just a little bit of a change in how we see things. We don't have to make any drastic external changes. Just a little change in the way we see things, the way we deal with things. Sometimes people criticize us for using material devices like dictaphones, typewriters, and airplanes. But we reply that these things are spiritual. If they are used for our sense gratification, they are material. But if used in relation to Krishna, they are spiritual. It is the consciousness that's important. The consciousness that's important. Okay, now we're going to get into a big one. Have a look at the next heading. Is renunciation possible? Actually, renunciation is not possible. If one renounces his palatial building and goes to a forest, there's actually no renunciation, but the palatial building is the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the forest is also the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If he changes from one property to another, that does not mean that he renounces. He was never the proprietor of either the palace or the forest. Renunciation again necessitates renouncing the false understanding that one can lord it over material nature. All it means is instead of seeing, I own this house, you just have to think and act on the platform, this is Krishna's house, but he's put it in my care. Whole shift. I'm not the master, I'm the servant. Whole shift. Just in this little thing. It's not my house. It's Krishna's house, but he's put it in my care. So then, I take care of it. Simple thing. When one renounces his false attitude and renounces the puffed up position that he is also God, that is real renunciation. Otherwise, there is no meaning of renunciation. Rupa Goswami advises that if one renounces anything which could be applied in the service of the Lord and does not use it for that purpose, that is called phago vairagya, insufficient or false renunciation. Everything belongs to the Supreme Person of Godhead. Therefore, everything can be engaged in the service of the Lord. So we're not only talking gross things, we're also talking subtle things. We may have a talent. Huh? We may be very intellectual. We may be expert in some field. That's also a gift of Krishna. That's also Krishna's energy. That should also be used in Krishna's service. Whatever we have, it's all coming from Krishna. It's an opulence of the bhuti of Krishna. It's not ours. It's on loan. It's actually on loan. So if somebody loans you some money to make an investment and make more capital and you just leave it sitting under the pillow in your bedroom, is he going to allow you to keep that money or is he going to take it back? So whatever resources we have, we may be very expert as a communicator. We may be very expert in making money, whatever we're expert at. It can be engaged in Krishna's service. And I'm not talking institutionally. This is a one-on-one heart thing. How Krishna wants you to use your resources is between you and Krishna and Guru. How they can be used. It will differ from person to person. There is no such thing as attachment-detachment. We must know that everything belongs to Krishna, and we are servants of Krishna. This knowledge is required. That is Krishna consciousness. And when you understand that everything is belonging to Krishna, then the next sense is, why not everything be used for Krishna? A transcendentalist is eager to execute his service to the Lord, and therefore he is grateful when the Lord provides material facilities for such service. Mere renunciation of the material world is Phalga Vairagya, an immature stage of spiritual understanding. One must come to the stage of Yukta Vairagya, engaging everything in the service of Lord Krishna. A Krishna conscious person well knows that everything belongs to Krishna, and thus he is always free from feelings of personal possession. As such, he has no hankering for anything on his own personal account. He knows how to accept things in favor of Krishna consciousness and how to reject things unfavorable to Krishna consciousness. It doesn't mean that he doesn't have likes and dislikes, but it's going to be in line with what does Thakurji want? What does Thakurji like, dislike? And as a servant, I'll be trying to fulfill those desires. It's a preoccupation. Not with mine, but you know, the other becomes very insignificant when you're living this paradigm. Okay, let's have a look what all this has got to do with surrender. Does it really have anything to do with surrender? Let's have a look. Krishna is everything favorably. That is called Sharanagati. Why? Because you're in harmony with Krishna. Just imagine you have a computer. Brand new computer. It's a Mac. First class. You get it home. One part of the computer is determined to do its own thing. Whole thing's a waste of time. Whole thing's a waste of time. We're that delinquent part of the computer right now. We're messing things up. Okay, Krishna has everything favorably. That is called Sharanagati. Just like Krishna says, Savadamam Parityajya Mamikam Sharanam Vraja. That does not mean that it was told to Krishna, Arjuna. So Arjuna did not give up his profession as a fighter, but he submitted to Krishna. He Krishnized the fighting principle. He fought for Krishna, not that he gave up fighting. In the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, he was a fighter and a soldier. At the end of his understanding Bhagavad Gita, he remained a fighter and a soldier. But his consciousness was changed. That is the difference. One who acts in Krishna consciousness under superior direction is called Yukta. The technical term is Yukta Vairagya. This is further explained by Srila Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami says that as long as we're in this material world, we have to act. We cannot cease acting. Therefore, if actions are performed and the fruits are given to Krishna, then that is called Yukta Vairagya. Actually situated in renunciation, such activities clear the mirror of the mind. And as the actor gradually makes progress in spiritual realization, he becomes completely surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, what's one thing that is not clear here, and it's a fundamental thing that we have to be aware of, is that what makes all of this possible is, as I said earlier, the shelter and service of bona fide guru. It may be Siksha Guru. We all have primary Siksha Guru in the form of Srila Prabhupada. It may be our present Diksha Guru is also acting as our Siksha Guru. Whatever the case, that person who is following strictly in the footsteps of Rupa Goswami, we have to be taking guidance from that person. It may be by reading books, hearing tapes, whatever it is, but we have to be taking guidance. Now, why? We talked about the mind, this mad pendulum that is just, how long is it going to go on? Back, forward, back, forward, back, forward. One day a great renunciate, next day a great enjoyer. You know, how long are we going to do that? We can just cut through it. Now, the way we cut through this is very simple but very subtle. The fact is that what empowers us to get free of the grip of the mind is that instruction. That's why that instruction is called Prema Sutta. It's a thread of prem. Because if you have affection for Guru, affection for Prabhupada, they say something, it resonates with you. I want to follow that. I really want to try that. You try your best. The mind starts swinging backwards and forwards. No, I'm holding on to this. What power does the mind have? It's not going to happen overnight, but slowly, slowly, that Prema Sutta is going to become a thick rope of support. What in effect we're talking about is your faith is becoming very fixed, very supportive of your bhajan, very supportive of your service, of your desire to live in this world as a Krishna conscious devotee. So that's just going to cut through it like that. And that affection, it can't be just rules and regulations following rules. There has to be affection also. This is why relationship is so important. When there's relationship, there's affection, then Gurudev wants me to do this. I'm not getting up to go to Mangalati because I'm interested in going to Mangalati. I'm more attached to my pillow than I am to Radha Shyam. But Gurudev wants me to do it. For Gurudev's pleasure, I'll do it. You see? And this makes it just cuts through it. Are you understanding what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah? This is the way it cuts through it. So this lifetimes. Aversion, attraction. No, got nothing to do with attraction and aversion. That's your mind talking. Just follow my instruction. In the beginning stages, and those beginning stages may be some years, mine's going to scream, why are you doing that? Don't do that! Last time you did that, don't you remember what... Very expert, the mind. Don't listen to it. Just cut through it. Take shelter. Prabhupada says only prashadam. Mine says it's a fabulous new restaurant in Bengal. Sorry. I'm trying to be a Prabhupada. No, I don't want to do that. I'll cook something special for the Giras today. I'll have fish today, but I'll have it at home. And it'll be Giras for sure. Huh? You see, it's such a simple thing when you cut it down to the bare facts. Simple thing. Okay, so then we're cutting through this mind entanglement. That means we're no more preoccupied with me and mine. If we're cutting through mind's entanglement, that means no more preoccupation with me and mine. It means no more accepting and rejecting according to the mind's whims. It means no more enjoyership, controllership, doership mentality. It means all these things. Everything is Krishnaized. Just by the simple thing of following the instruction. You just cut through the whole madness. It's so simple. When you just decide, I'm not going to be a vegetarian. I'm going to be a prasadarian. Mm-hmm. It's so simple. When you just make that simple decision, I'm just going to follow Prabhupada's way of doing it. Then, you know, what power does anything have on you? You already made it up. You know, made up your mind what you're going to do. Okay. So what happens when we come to some understanding of this? Then we have some firm understanding of this, then we're ready for song 3. Only then are we ready for song 3. Before that, it would be just going through the motions. It wouldn't actually make any sense for us. In fact, you'd probably misunderstand the song. You'd probably completely get a wrong idea of what Bhagavad Gita is talking about. Okay, so let's have a look at it. Mind, body, family, whatever else. Maybe mind, I have surrendered your lotus feet, or you're the son of Nanda. Now the mood is not, it's mine. Look how charitable I am, Krishna. I'm giving it to you. That's not what he's saying. The mood is, I'm now aware that everything, including me, is yours. I've woken up to it. I want to live the reality. Yeah? So my mind, body, family, whatever else may be mine, I have surrendered at your lotus feet, O youthful son of Nanda. In good fortune, And the other interesting thing about this song, Prabhupada, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is such a brilliant psychologist, because in this song, he knows where we're at. He knows our reservations. So in this song, he's not talking about, I'm surrendering myself. He's about, I'm surrendering what I've got. I'm staying behind the fence. I'm not surrendering myself. I'm surrendering what I've got. And, you know, just to prove that I'm really serious, I'll also surrender a few other things, like the misconception that life can always be happy. I'll surrender that as well. So let's see what's going on here. Mind, body, family, whatever else may be mine, I have surrendered at your lotus feet, O youthful son of Nanda. In good fortune or in bad, in life or in death, all my difficulties have disappeared by accepting those feet of yours as my only shelter. Slay me or protect me as you wish, for you have full authority over your eternal servant. It is your wish that I be born again, that I may I take birth in the home of your devotee. May I be born again, even as a worm, as long as I remain your devotee. I have no desire to be born as a Brahma, averse to you. I yearn for the company of that devotee who is completely devoid of all desire for worldly enjoyment or liberation. That means pure unalloyed devotee. Father, mother, lover, son, lord, preceptor, and husband, you are everything to me. Now, if you don't understand where Bhaktivinoda Thakur is coming from, you can really make a mess of this verse. Father, mother, lover, son, lord, preceptor, and husband, you are everything to me. You can think, I don't need any of these others, you know, I just need Krishna. And then everything goes upside down in your life because you're playing the false renunciate. I don't need to know about you. I've got Krishna. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's very common misunderstanding. But let's have a look at another handout. It's called full of conception. This is just a few things. We won't read all of it today, but just as it becomes relevant. Have a look at number 7. Amazing perspective by Prabhupada in this Krishna book. How he's encouraging us to see things. Number 7 in the... Okay, our life, property, home, wife, children, house, country, society, and all paraphernalia which are very dear to us are expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the central object of love because he gives us all bliss, expanding himself in so many ways according to our different situations, namely bodily, mental, or spiritual. We have physical needs, we have mental needs, we have emotional needs. Krishna is recognizing that. He's manifesting as a husband, a wife, a child, a home. He's manifesting in all these ways to fulfill that need and to give us a chance to develop our love for him. A little bit different perspective than what we have now. You look at your husband and wife and think, this person is an expansion of Krishna. I'm into my life to fulfill my present needs and fulfill my main life. That's pretty amazing. So this is what we're talking about here. Not that nobody else is important because I got Krishna now. Not like that. Everything is Krishna. Everything, everyone is Krishna. But that's a very high platform of realization. We have to start somewhere. So just to have awareness. If you have that awareness, are you ever going to be abusive of your partner? Are you ever going to be non-appreciative of your partner? You're not going to be. Because you're realizing that Krishna has given this person for my present needs and my future needs. It's such a beautiful arrangement that Krishna has made. Isn't it? Just this one thing. This is such an amazing idea that God is giving. Let's read the one above it also, because this will also clear the air a bit. It is said that attachment from material objects in the home is due to illusion which makes the living entity conditioned in the material world. But this is only the case for persons who are not Krishna conscious. In the case of the residents of Vrindavan, such obstructions as attachment to heart and home are non-existent, because their attachment has been directed to you. Doesn't mean that you don't love your wife, don't love your husband, but the central attraction is Krishna. And that's protecting you in so many ways. Because their attachment has been directed to you, and their homes have been converted into temples by your constant presence there, that means you are constantly aware that the deity is Krishna. Not that you put the deity in a closet when it's time to offer bhog so you can eat. You open the closet and do your offering, and you close the closet again. Not like that. We're talking, like constant presence means you're aware this house is Krishna's house. This house is Krishna's house. He's the master. He's aware of what's going on. He hears when I raise my voice. He hears when I get angry. I'm his servant. Is he happy with that? Because their attachment has been directed unto you, and their homes have been converted into temples by your constant presence there, and because they have forgotten everything for your sake, there is no impediment for a Krishna conscious person. That means a person conscious of Krishna. There's no need a big handbook to understand what Krishna consciousness means. This means that you're conscious of Krishna, just conscious of Krishna favorably. There's no such thing as impediments due to attachment for heart and home. There is no illusion. It's no illusion. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, O Khan, please hear me, O Lord of Radha. You are my life and soul. Okay. It's such a beautiful bhajan. Let's hear it.
Question.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Sorry,
no
question.
So when we hear this, Mataji, this that Krishna is whatever children or parents or the husband, wife,
right?
This expansion of Krishna, so we see in relation to that,
right? And so, it's not only expansion, but an expansion to meet your present needs, whether they be physical, mental, emotional, whatever.
Yeah. So when it is favorable in the sense that it's a cooperation is there within the family members,
okay,
it becomes very easy to understand, okay, this is how it. But when it's not favorable, so for example, a husband wants to do this way and the wife wants to do this way, maybe even in the spiritually they're not in the same level of understanding. So then, how do we understand?
I guess what you're saying. What we're talking about here is a level of sensitivity and maturity. So then, the first thing that we should always ask ourselves when we have, for example, a difference of opinion with our spouse, where's this difference coming from? Is it Krishna trying to point out that maybe my perspective is a little bit warped, a little outmoded, a little insensitive, or is it the other person needs adjustment, or is it that we both need adjustment? So we're talking conscious cooperator. I have to be conscious, not that I'm not in that mood anymore, Krishna, that I'm the controller and I'm the doer. It's not my way or the highway anymore. I'm aware that you've put me in this circumstance at this time because I have lessons to learn. And the person that I'm in the circumstance with also has lessons to learn. And you've figured out that we can best learn the lessons together. We can best learn the lessons together. So then, when you look at it like that, then the first thing you're going to do, and this is a very important principle, three, always remember, three is not a crowd. Usually when we think of intimate relationships, we think three is a crowd. But it's not. Because the third person is Krishna. Whenever you have a difficulty with anybody, not with just in-laws or someone in the family, with work, boss, whatever. Whenever you have a difficulty, the first thing you do is you pray to Krishna. Krishna, you're in my heart, you're in this person's heart. We're both your servants. We can't seem to get along. I'm not sure whether it's me that needs to adjust or the boss that needs to adjust. Can you please work it out? It works miracles. When I was in management for so many years in Mayapur, that's how I lived. By taking shelter of this principle. Because in management there's always, you know, like, it's just the nature of working with passion. But, you know, if it just this little simple thing. Not, oh, you're wrong. Why did you say that? Why did he do that? Get all defensive. All offensive. Not all that. Okay, Krishna, something's going on here. I don't understand it. But you're in his heart, you're in my heart. Maybe you can rectify. Because when you do that, you cut through all the barriers. Krishna can work heart to heart. We can't work heart to heart. We have to deal with a contaminated mind. We have to deal with a distorted intelligence. And worst of all, we have to deal with this huge ahankar. We both have it all. Such a big problem. So difficult to communicate. Because there's all these shields in between the two people. My ahankar, your ahankar, my crazy intelligence, your crazy intelligence, my crazy mind, your crazy mind, my karma, your karma, my conditioning, your conditioning, my prejudice is your prejudice. How are we going to have communication? You're catching it.
Yes.
But if you just, Krishna, you're in his heart, you're in my heart. Preachers also, we were trained like that in the early days. Don't forget when you go out, on book distribution, whatever service you're doing, it involves other people. Don't forget, Krishna, involve Krishna. Always involve Krishna. Yeah? He may be, you know, you try it next time the boss yells at you. You just quietly stand there and let him yell at him, let him yell at you, but inside you'd be praying, Krishna, you know, can you do something with this guy's heart? I don't know what to do with this guy. you what? I mean, I've experienced miracles with this. Literal miracles. Like complete turnabout of people. Just from Krishna's involvement.
Yeah, in fact, these situations then increase our bonding with the Krishna. Because
exactly. Because instead of your hatred for the other person, it increases your bonding with Krishna. And you get also an idea of how actually everybody is, they can't work independent of Krishna.
Yes.
Yeah? Any other question?
Yeah. How is it absent very often, devotees, especially like certain devotees who are like kind of from old school, when they come to some difficult situations, they have difficulties to, like, in the sense of, you know, giving it completely to Krishna, because they feel that you're involved in Krishna, you're engaged in Krishna's service, you're supposed to serve no matter how many difficulties we have. So this is, they see it more in a sense of you're involved in Krishna in the service. It's not, if I'm going through some difficulties, this is, I need to somehow or other do the seva. But it's, I don't know if my question is clear. So what is the borderline between this, you know, completely, I relate to this very much. This is what I have learned from you and appreciate it a lot, and it's life-saving in many different situations for me. But what would you explain for this?
I'm not understanding exactly what the question is.
Mataji, I think this also came, had come up a long time back.
Okay.
2 years back.
Yeah.
If I'm understanding your question, that is also
give it a try. Yes,
just give it a try. That there's a difficulty, and I'm meeting Krishna, and why should I trouble Krishna? Why should
is that
I bring
what
in?
You're
why
saying?
Yes, that
oh,
it's
okay.
like it's like.
Why should I bring in Krishna for my own? Let me just continue serving.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Sometimes that rigidity in being a senior, that's what you're saying, some old school, that kind of a rigid attitude towards.
One thing we have to be very aware of is that we don't want to get caught up in with paradigms that sound nice but have nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. Because the goal that Mahaprabhu has given us is brush prem. You look at Goloka consciousness, what is the first thing everybody does as soon as there's some problem?
Krishna.
When you have no... See, the thing is that when you're on the mental platform, you can... You know, there's two ways you can spell rationalize. And you can have, you know, like...
Yes.
That is a verb, rationalize. Or you can have rational lies. So our mind is expert at this. Very rational, but it's all lie. Makes a lot of sense, but it's all lies. Okay? So the thing is that, okay, they may have that mentality, but it's a separatist mentality that's got nothing to do with reality. Point is that as Bhaktivinoda Thakur is pointing out, Rupa Goswami is pointing out, Krishna himself is pointing out, he is the protector. He is the maintainer. You're starving. You don't go to your mother for a meal? I'll figure out my own. I shouldn't disturb my mother. No. It just makes sense. But we get locked. You see how we get locked into these ideas? They've got nothing to do with reality. And why? Because we're not cutting through it all by taking shorter instructions. I'm watching my taking so many. It's a basic principle. See, Krishna is my only protector. Krishna is my only maintainer. So if you know, if you've only got one person giving you the paycheck, you're going to go just try and get it from somebody else. You've got to go to the person who's giving it. Isn't it? Is that okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Let's have a listen to Melissa and play again. We'll just hear a couple of verses to get the mood, and then we'll start it again, and we'll try and sing with it.
Mano shode ho viho jo ki chumo or pilu tu aapode nando kisho मानुषो देहो गेहो जो किछु मो और पीलु दुआ पदे नंदो किछु पदे भी पदे जीवने मरोने दाय मामोगे लाडुआ ओ पदो बरो शम पदे भी पदे जीवने मरोने दाय
So the mood, the whole mood has become a lot more mellow, a lot softer, heart is changing. And then in fourth song, very interesting what's happening here. The mood of surrender in this song is more deeply entered into Bhaktivinoda Thakur's heart. And now he's inspired to surrender all sense of me and mine. And because he now feels that I am now yours, Krishna, or that is previously called mine, he knows as Krishna's. So this mood or expression of heart is allowing him to give up the mental platform. Just this mood is allowing him to kick out the mental platform. It's allowing him, how is it allowing him to kick out the mental platform? Because it's allowing him to taste and experience dasya, dasharati, affection born of being Krishna's servant. You're getting a taste and experience of that rati. Nothing else is very interesting once you get that taste. So that heart, deep affection and commitment to being Krishna's servant is taking birth very strongly in his heart, and it's so very, very beautiful. Let's have a look at this. It's a major swing that we see here. He's really, it's entered so deeply, this mood. Just but from, well, how has it developed so deeply? By his practice of seeing all the mind as Krishna. That's the first step. Too sensitive, too close to talk about I'm Krishna. I should surrender to Krishna. But that will come naturally if first we're talking about all that I see is mine. And then we see how comfortable that feels, how natural that feels. It's not at all threatening. It actually gives a sense of security. Then okay, we'll take the next step. Let's have a read of this beautiful song. All there is that may be indicated by the words Aham, I, and Mama, mine, I offer at your lotus feet, O merciful Lord. I no longer consider even myself to be mine, O Lord. Now I've become exclusively yours. Just imagine the intensity of bonding in such a relationship where you can say that. Such a bond of relationship has to be there for you to be able to say that. Let not live it. You have to be really convinced that Krishna's there. You have to be really convinced that Krishna is not envious of you. He has your best interests at heart. You have to be convinced that Krishna is your maintainer, Krishna is your protector. That's why all the other things that we have to see as a package of developing the heart of a Charana Bhakta. Yeah? So it's such a beautiful, I no longer consider even myself to be mine, O Lord. Now I've become exclusively yours. When I have a sense of mine, so much anxiety, so much fear, and so much to protect. You know, always an anxiety, I have so much to protect, so much to maintain. Such an anxiety, but it's yours. I'm yours, everything I've got is yours. So still the maintenance is there, still the protection is there, but the fear and anxiety is not there. You see? It's so beautiful. The soul inhabiting this mortal body has given up the false ego attached to the word I. For today the spiritual sense of being yours has entered his heart. All my possessions, body, home, servants, brothers, friends, wife, sons, personal belongings, fencing, and gateways, all of these things are now yours. For I have become your servant. I am but a mere occupant in your house. Your house, I'm living in your house as your servant. You are the owner of the house and I am your most obedient servant. My only activity now is endeavoring for your happiness. Now this is a very deep statement that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making, because it sounds a little bit trite and a little bit unreal, a little superficial, if you don't understand the realization behind it. This whole song is talking about waking up to the fact that I am part and parcel of Krishna. I am part and parcel of Krishna. As Prabhupada explains in Bhagavad Gita, do I feed myself and feel satisfied by eating a banana through my ear? I can't eat through my ear. I have to satisfy the stomach. You can't, and the other example he gives is of watering the root of a tree. not that you water each individual leaf, and by watering each leaf, the tree will become strong and healthy. No, you water the root, and then everything comes. So in that sense, it's not that I'm not concerned for my own happiness, but I know that my happiness will come through you being happy. That separatist mentality is not there anymore. Krishna, if he's happy, I'll be happy. All of my, yeah, so you're the owner of the house. My only activity now is endeavoring for your happiness. Whatever pious or impious activities that were performed by me, either with my gross or subtle bodies, are no longer mine, O Lord, for I am redeemed. My will has now become merged with your will. From this day forward, Bhaktivinoda has completely forgotten himself. Now it sounds, you know, like we can be a little bit disturbed by this, you know, what? My will becoming merged with your will? What? I'm attached to my independence. But does the finger have any independence? I mean, just being practical. Does the finger have any independence? It doesn't have any independence. That's our actual position. We're part and parcel of Krishna. So when you see it like that, it doesn't make any sense to, you know, you have Independence Day for fingers. That's about it, but it doesn't make any sense. We're part and parcel of Krishna. Any questions on that?
That means we are dependent on the three modes of material nature and mind, and we are associating with the external energy, or the internal energy is the oneness of the will with Krishna.
You see, the whole thing is that, as Prabhupada explained in the attachment, means detachment, Kanda, the whole thing is a matter of taking shelter. Everything depends on taking shelter. Because we are tathasta. We are, by nature, marginal. Marginal means we have to take shelter. Now we can take it consciously by lining up with Krishna, Guru Varanga, or we can just float through on the modes, and by doing that, we will be subconsciously taking care of the material energy. We don't have any other choice. We have to take shelter, and there's only two other energies besides us. So if we take conscious shelter, everything we do, and everything we do, you know, and as soon as a challenge comes, this is Golok mood, as soon as a challenge comes, take shelter. Not try and figure it out, work it out. Mental platform. That will come later under shelter. First is take shelter. Mm-hmm. And then where's the question of the material energy? Prabhupada tells the story of the devotee who wanted to enter a house, but there's a huge dog. Big sign on the gate and a huge dog. Every time they open and shut up the gate, the dog would start barking. So what does an intelligent person do? You call out to the master. Maya is Krishna's dog. She's protecting Krishna's interests. So then if, you know, like you call out to the master comes out of the house, the dog going to bite you?
Sometimes the master takes time
to come out. You know, it depends. You know, you look at it this way. If there's a person selling wares wants to come into the house, and there's a good friend, and there's a good friend that wants to enter the house. The master may take time to come out to deal with the vendor, but he won't take time to come out to the friend. So it depends on the relationship you're developing with Krishna. Are you trying to do business with him? Or are you trying to develop a friendship with him? So if you're trying to develop a business, obviously he's going to take time. Oh my God, here comes this guy again. What's he selling this time? What's he want me to do in our finances time? Yeah. Oh, are you coming as a friend?
I mean, absolutely, fully get what you're saying, but like in the lives of the Pandavas,
right.
The obstacles was there.
Yeah.
And the resolve, the time it took to resolve,
yeah.
They took shelter of Krishna. I mean, the devotees of the Lord of Krishna. The time it took to resolve was after Mahabharata, or I mean, practically speaking.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes.
Yeah, but see, you can't see it just in a matter of time. Why did it take time? Because they were surrendered to Krishna's plan. Krishna had a plan. So there happened to be Nityasiddha associates of the Lord. They were prepared to be pawns for Krishna to instrument his plan. And sometimes he does that with us. Sometimes he wants, and this Prabhupada talks about this in Bhagavatam, sometimes he wants to use his devotee to teach others something. So he'll put his devotee through difficulties, knowing that his devotee is going to respond in a way that's going to encourage those people to take shelter of him. Just look what he went through and look how he dealt with it. Wow. Yeah?
Yes, this is wonderful.
So it's not, you know, like if, you know, like Krishna has a plan, then, you know, why do we have to have an independent plan? This is why the devotee, Rupa Goswami talks about this in Bhagavad Gita, that's why the devotee is the only person who's peaceful, because he doesn't have a separate plan. He may not even be aware of what Krishna's plan is. But he has a bonding with Krishna. He has a love for Krishna. At least an attachment for Krishna. He's got a reason for doing this. He's got a reason for putting me through this. Maybe I should ask him what the reason is. Maybe if I know he's kind enough to explain what the reason is, I can be a conscious cooperator. And what's going on? Yeah?
Yes.
It's okay?
Yes.
Any other questions?
And that's Bhagavatam, like you say, that devotees in Bhagavatam always are having problems.
Bhagavatam's all about devotees having problems. Look at it, all the lila. It's all about devotees having problems, facing challenges. And how they resolve them. How they resolve their problems. The Chiroskami's problem.
I'm just reading the Dhamma, for Dhammadarashtakam, the two sons of Kuvair, Nanakuvair and Manigriva. So Lord Krishna, when he meets them in the end, he says, it's because you saw Narad Muni that you're getting to see me and my leelas and achieve this state of Prema Bhakti. But what I thought was amazing was, see the time which they went through to achieve that grace. But actually the auspiciousness started when they met Narad Muni.
Right.
Though it was in a very awkward circumstance, the auspiciousness had already begun.
Right.
Now it just took a matter of time for that, you know, for their whatever. What they
and did. In his mercy, he put them in a position where they couldn't make a mess of it.
Yes.
You know, because they were very degraded. So if they'd maintained human form and given them some blessing, they would have made a mess of it.
Yeah.
So he put them in the form of trees, but he gave them ability to remember, be conscious. So that gave them a lot to think about. But the sweetest thing is when Krishna says, they start glorifying him. He says, what are you talking about? I'm just a little boy tied up. I'm going to liberate you. But better talk to my mother. Okay, let's go and have a look at where we're up to.
Fourth song.
Six, yeah?
Fourth.
No, six, six.
Six song. Yeah.
Song six, number that's no. 6 point, fourth song.
Okay. You are the owner of the house, we're back to there, or only at four?
No, fourth song, 7 point.
Four, 7 point.
Oh, okay. Whatever pious and impious activities that were performed by me, either with my gross or subtle bodies, are no longer mine, O Lord. For I am redeemed. My will has become merged with your will. From this day forward, Bhaktivinoda has completely forgotten himself. Okay. Now, this number five is a very interesting song. Because we're not looking at the mood of a renunciation, we're looking at the mood of a servant. What it practically means to be servant. Let's just have a look at this. O Lord, nothing further remains that may be called mine. Father, friend, brother, you alone are all these to me. Remember what that means. My friends, wives, sons, and daughters are now your servants and maidservants. Whatever care I take for them is only as they are related to you. You see, the thing is that when we're talking sambandhagyan, we're not only talking about our relationship with Krishna. We're talking about our relationship with Krishna's energies. Our husband, wife, children, home, all of this is Krishna's energies. So we also have to know how to deal, you know, appropriately with these energies. That means there has to be Krishna-centeredness. Declaring that my world, family members, home, and wife are truly yours, I continue to, as a mere servant, to dutifully protect them. For the purpose of your service, I will earn money and bear the expense of maintaining your household. I know nothing of what is good or bad. I simply render my service. See how he's cut through the mental platform? He's not swinging anymore. I'm not talking good and bad. I've just got my service. I'm just doing my service. It's pretty amazing. I am but a watchman sent to guard the properties of your household. I exercise my senses only according to your direction, unless I desire to hear, see, smell, and taste. I no longer do anything for my own pleasure. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, your pleasure is the essence of everything. Because his pleasure is also known as Bhaktivinoda Thakur's pleasure. That's the way it works in the real world. Number six. Sixth song is really quite something. Here, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is in a very contemplative mood. He's really contemplating in this song. He's realizing that he's making a very, very big step. And he's also aware of how tiny and powerless he is. So those two together, that's something to think about. So this gives a sense of dependence, develops a sense of dependence. I've made a big step and I'm tiny. So I can either go crazy or become dependent. Yeah. So he's choosing to develop, this is the sense of dependence is arising in his heart. And he's praying to Krishna, please protect me from the illusion of me and mine. Please always protect my desire to be your surrendered devotee. We forget to pray these prayers. We forget to pray these prayers. These prayers are so important. We are living in a world that's, you know, saturated with me and mine. We have to pray for protection from that mentality. We are not living in a world meant for Krishna's servants. So we have to pray for protection of our desire to become Krishna's servant. Because this place is not made for that. Can you see the importance of this kind of prayer? So this kind of contemplation of Bhaktivinoda is so important. And he's Krishna saying, you know, I'm asking all this from you, please, I'm depending on you. And then his understanding, okay, this is the nature of my consciousness right now, my need for this support. So who am I actually calling out to? I'm calling out to Nityananda Ram. Nityananda Ram is everything. Nityananda Ram is the source of the body you have. Nityananda Ram is the earth you walk on. Nityananda Ram is everything. So who better person who can take shelter of for as long as you're in Europe, this world, than Nityananda Ram? When Sridhar Maharaj, Prabhupada's godbrother, was leaving this world, for some time he hadn't been able to chant or anything, and he was, you know, quite bedridden. And just before he left, he started calling out, Nitai, Nitai, Nitai! And his servant said, Gurudev, Gurudev, you want your beads? You want your beads? Nitai, Nitai, Nitai! This is a reality. Nitai. Everything is spun from, you know, talk about this material world, what are we looking at? Krishna doesn't make it. If we're talking tattva, we say Krishna created the material sky. Tattva. But working principle, who did the work? Nityananda Ram. Servitor Godhead. He did the whole thing. So who else is better to take Chandra? So then we see, let's have a look at the sun, if we can't see the sun. We'll give it a try. It's such a, it's very, very contemplative, and it's also very, it's okay, I can manage. It's also very, very,
I can hold it for you.
Okay. It's also very, very instructive. It's actually teaching us practically how we can depend on Krishna. In the, this is the mood of the Brijavasis. Bhakti Vinod is not going to give you anything but the mood of the Brijavasis. In truth, all things belong to you. Now, Jiva is ever the owner of anything. The tiny soul wanders in this world mistakenly thinking in terms of aham. I am this material body and mind, and mama, everything related to this body is mine. Thus he suffers the consequences of both sorrow and fear. The conditioned soul thinks that all the things related to the false conceptions of I and mine are his exclusive treasures. Calling them his own, his mind is firmly convinced of this gross delusion. Due to such vanity, I also fell into this material world. Floundering in the ocean of mundane existence like a drowning man, I suffer the pangs of rising and sinking in the ocean. I take shelter at your lotus feet, which deliver one from fear, and dedicate the whole of myself to you on this day. The false conception of thinking in terms of I and mine have left me now. May it never find again a place to settle within my heart. Please give me this strength alone, O Lord, that I may be able to keep the false conceptions of I and mine far away. Give me the strength. You go into a highly polluted area. How are you not going to get polluted? You have to be protected. You have to take vaccine. So please, you give me the strength that I may be able to keep the false conceptions of I and mine far away. May the mood of self-surrender to you remain firmly fixed in my heart and not prove to be momentary like the cleanliness of an elephant after a bath. Bhaktivinoda begs at the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda for that grace which causes all illusory concepts of false pride to flee. Such a beautiful song. And then in 7, this is a really sweet song, because here, this is a heart-to-heart song. No protocol, no profile, no pretense, just as it is. I'm on friendship terms with Krishna, just as it is. No profile. I submit at your lotus feet, O Lord, that I am fallen and most wretched. This fact is known to the three worlds. There is no sinner in the world more sinful than me. In the entire universe, there is no offender whose offense is equal mine. By attempting to clear myself of all these sins and offenses, I am put to shame. All this is surely understood by you. We can't lift ourselves up. We find ourselves in quicksand every move we make just puts us further into it. That's the circumstance. So that's what he's saying here. Of whom will I take shelter except for you? You are the Lord of all lords, the son of the King of Raj. This world is yours, O Lord, and you pervade all things in it. You dispel the sinful result of offenses committed against you. You alone are the shelter of those whose feet stumble off the proper path. Apart from you, what else exists, O merciful Lord? Amazing. You alone are the shoulder of those whose feet stumble off the proper path. Apart from you, what else exists, O merciful Lord? Of persons like me who have fallen, if someone falls down, they can't fall any further than the ground. Unless you're in some space age movie. You can't fall lower than the ground. So that ground is Krishna. So even you've stumbled off the path, still you can't fall lower than the ground. Because Krishna's giving that support to everybody. It's like a safety net. Krishna's giving it to everyone. All persons like me who offended you will ultimately seek to achieve your shelter. Sooner or later.
Like evolution? Almost like the soul will ultimately come to that.
Not necessarily. I mean, you know, eventually over however long time,
yeah.
You can look at it that way, but you know, like, why take so long? Why take so long? But you know, now takes full shot at you, of you, and surrenders himself at your lotus feet on this very day. So beautiful. And then the final song, he's expressing his self-satisfaction. It's a self-satisfaction because he's shifted from the mental platform to the devotional platform. He's no longer swinging. There's no more pendulum. He has a taste and an attachment for Dasya, the main Krishna servant. So then, and there's also his move from being without shelter to having shelter. Life was so hellish before because he couldn't see any shelter. He tried. He saw his money as shelter for a while. He saw his health as shelter for a while. Didn't work that way. So where's my shelter? Such a hellish experience. But he's realized his shelter. So he's moved from being without shelter to having shelter. He's moved from being full of fear and anxiety to being fully joyful and peaceful. The externals haven't changed. The mentality's changed. The heart's changed. Material sky means difficulty. Wherever there's rajatama, wherever there's duality, you're going to have problems. Especially when there's irreligious environment. It's going to be a lot of problems. But you can still be fully joyful and peaceful in that circumstance because of sambandhya, your relationship with Krishna. You look at Haridas Thakur, beaten in 22 marketplaces. And what was his concern? Oh, my back hurts? No. Oh, Krishna, please don't take these guys seriously. Don't let them suffer because of me. Please forgive them. Please be kind. You know, he's being dragged, physically dragged to 22 marketplaces. And this is his mentality. This is the perfection of what we're looking at. So amazing. And he's moved from being absorbed in the struggle for existence to striving to please and serve Krishna. Struggle is still there. But the nature of the struggle is different. It's not a struggle for existence. It's a very bitter struggle, that one. But the struggle to please, serve and please Krishna is sweet. Because you're not dealing with dead matter, you're dealing with a person. A person who reciprocates. Now the interesting thing is that we'll see when we read through the song that he tells us that to experience all of this, all we have to do is give up on the mind. We just have to give up on the mind and let the heart beat in tune. We shall not be in tune. That's all we have to do. Let's read through the song. Number 8, I have become supremely happy by surrendering myself at your lotus feet. Sorrow has gone far away and there are no more cares. All I see is joy in the four directions. Your two lotus feet are reservoirs of immortal nectar that grant freedom from both sorrow and fear. Resting in them, I have found peace and have completely given up the fear of worldly existence. It's not that worldly existence is not there, but he's under the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. So that's giving him a sense of security and protection, which is very, very real. It's very real. I shall render service in your household and never endeavor to enjoy the fruits of that service. Rather, I shall strive for whatever pleases you, being fully enamored by your lotus feet. All the troubles encountered in your service shall be the cause of great happiness. For in your devotional service, joy and sorrow are equally great riches. Both destroy the misery of ignorance. It's important to understand what he's saying here. What he's saying here is that when we're experiencing distress, in effect what we're experiencing is the burning out of impious karma. And when we're experiencing happiness, mundane happiness, it's the burning out of pious karma. So both slates have to be clean. I have to go back home, both slates have to be clean. So we're going to go through it. We're going to go through experiencing happiness and distress externally. But that doesn't have to affect our consciousness. It doesn't have to affect our relationship with Krishna. It's just like you're sitting in a room pouring with rain outside. All of a sudden, ice starts falling. Huge ice balls start falling. What's it got to do with you? What's it got to do with you? You're seeing it. You know, if you don't have much intelligence, you go out into it. So this is what happens. A challenge comes. A difficulty comes. Instead of taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, the mind drags us into preoccupation with the problem. That's like going out into the mad rainfall. We've been put out of the shelter of the house, of the room, out into the storm.
Still, it's a lot more peaceful if the storm is not there.
What's that?
Still, it's a lot more peaceful if the storm is not there. In the sense that challenges and temptations are constantly there.
Yeah. But, you know, if they're constantly there, it means that Krishna's trying to teach us something and somehow we're not learning. But as long as we're not learning, the same tests are going to come again and again. In different dress, different shapes and forms, but the same tests are going to come again and again. It's like at school. You don't pass grade one, you go back to grade one, you do the exam again. Like that. It's not that, you know, it's automatic. You go in at, you know, grade one and come out at grade seven. It's just automatic. You don't have to do anything. It's not automatic. You have to go through, you know, training, and then you have to go for exam. You don't pass the exam, you have to go back to grade one. Like that.
Sometimes, you know, devotees complain, this situation would be a little okay, then, you know, my Krishna consciousness would be a little better. You know, you get to hear this so many times. And it's like they say, at least let me be peaceful, then I can chant better. But if this is constantly there, it's raining, you know, storm, this, that keeps continuously bugging my consciousness.
Yeah, but you can see it a different way. You see, everything depends on your perspective. If you see it, Krishna is giving me a chance to develop my devotional muscle. I have to develop devotional muscle. Otherwise, you can see it from different angles. So, what's the biggest storm? Death. We go very peacefully through life, mode of ignorance, peaceful, very peaceful. Big storm comes, what are we doing? It's a blessing. All the little tests are preparing you for the big one. Actually, the more tests you get, the better. And we especially need lessons in dependence. We are such fools. We do not want to depend on Krishna. I can do it better. I'll try again and again and again. I'll fail again and again, but I can do it better. So what does Krishna do when he sees this fool is trying to love me, but he needs for that to really happen, for his heart to really open up to my love, he has to learn to depend on me. He's not doing it. How can I help him? I can help him best by taking away all his other supports. I'll take away his money. I'll take away his health. You're going to depend on me. You see? It's like with a child. You know, the mother tells the child 100 times, don't do that. And then, for God's sake, you know, like, I don't know how many times I've done, okay, do it. Kid falls flat on his face. Ah! Find me! Yeah, but we should be aware of that. That when we, you know, the whole thing is a relationship of loving dependence with Krishna. If that's not there, how can dasharati develop? How can the loving mood of a servant develop if you don't have a dependence on the master? Oh, if he doesn't feed me, I'll eat somewhere else. If he doesn't pay me, I'll borrow there. Not like that. Dependence on Krishna. So when he sees that you're sincerely trying to develop in a loving relationship with him, but you have this block. I don't want to depend on Krishna. I'm frightened to surrender my sense of independence. Then okay. We'll arrange a few dramas for you. They're just dramas. They're nothing serious. They're just dramas. But it's all about, you know, Krishna's got no interest in anything else that we've got interest in. His only interest is developing his, our loving relationship with him. Everything else he doesn't have an interest in. So he's going to put all his energy into that. How can I next help this guy? Get over this madness. Yeah? All these troubles. I have completely forgotten all my past history by feeling in my mind the great joy of your service. I am indeed yours and you are truly mine. What need is there of any other treasure? Bhaktivinoda sinks deeply into the ocean of pure bliss by engaging in your service. He devotes all his efforts according to your wishes while living in your house. So beautiful. So the two songs that we should be most aware of is number 3 and 4. Because this is where we're moving. So we need to, the area we need to move in now from where we are now. We haven't listened to 3, so now let's have a listen to 4. The mood of this rag that Bhaktivinoda is given is really quite amazing, because it's got such a sense of, you get the feeling of a traveler coming out of a desert into an oasis. There's a sort of feeling of optimism and strength here. Let's have a listen to this. It's really beautiful. We'll just hear two verses and then we'll stop. And
Vaishnava.